Hello, friends. Lee Brown here, and you've landed on Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, you're going to have your mind opened a little bit because mine sure was. Got a really great perspective on elderly housing. And I don't mean the age of the home. I mean the housing of the elderly. So Therese Southwell is with us today. I keep calling her Therese because I'm Southern. She keeps saying Therese, but you probably got it. Regardless, enjoy this conversation. Get your pad and pen to take some notes, and I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Therese Southwell, I'm so glad to have you on the podcast. Thank you for coming over today to chat a little bit about real estate. Tell us where you are, what you do in and around real estate. Give us a little bit of insight into your expertise.
Okay, so I'm Therese Southwell, and I live in Pennsylvania, in the southeastern Pennsylvania area. I do residential real estate and commercial real estate. And during COVID, I basically took these two knowledge bases and put them together and did some research to find out how I could open up a small senior living home.
Talk to me about how you landed in the senior space. What drew your heart and your head there to say, I've got to find some ideas?
I took care of my Aunt Kay for many years, and she did not want to go to a big facility. And she also didn't want to have in-home care. And a lot of times that is, you know, you really have to manage that. And she really just wanted to stay in a place that was a home. She wanted a residential home where she had a kitchen and things that she was familiar with. So she did pass, but during COVID, I thought about it a lot with everything that was happening in the senior space and how there were so many horrible things happening to the senior community during COVID. So I thought to myself, we need to have another option here in Pennsylvania because there were none here in Pennsylvania at the time.
Well, and it's a great point because when you think about senior housing, it's either somebody's living at home and their kids are nervous that they're at home by themselves, or they're living with their kids, which doesn't happen nearly as often as it probably should. And then you have the giant nursing home mass group facilities. And we will not go down the rabbit hole of how horribly our seniors were treated in those facilities during COVID. But New York, you're on the clock here. And so what you're talking about is the fact that there's very little in between this giant chasm. And what you wanted for Aunt Kay was a little dignity, a little bit of independence, but a place where she would be safe and secure.
Absolutely. As I did some research to find out how I could start one of these, I found out that many people don't realize that this is allowed. And the Fair Housing Act protects elderly people with disabilities, whether they're in wheelchairs or they need assistance with their daily activities of daily life. The Fair Housing Act protects them and allows them to live in a residential community if that's what they want. So this, I became a real advocate for this because I don't believe that it can only have to be one or the other. If you need assistance and you need help, why should we tell you, you have to go to a big institution? You have to go there. If you want to live in a residential home, you should be allowed to. And that's what the Fair Housing Act allows you to do. So what you really have to do to make this happen, if you wanted to open one of these, is the first thing is you really have to call your municipality and see where they have in their code, in their zoning codes, these group homes. They're actually called group homes by a federal sense. And then every municipality has different names for them. Sometimes they call them residential assisted living facilities. Sometimes they call them community residential facilities. There's a million different names for them. What you have to remember is that it's the disability that creates the protection around these elderly people. So everybody's probably has a different number.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Follow Up Boss, one of the leading CRMs, client relationship managers for residential real estate, tons of top producing agents, and some of the fastest growing teams out there are using Follow Up Boss to increase lead conversion, eliminate busy work that you're not doing anyway, and frankly, deliver a higher class experience in real estate to everybody who chooses you as their realtor of choice. So if you're going to keep listening to this, which I know you will, there's more information and a personal review of Follow Up Boss. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. We might need some new marketing of group homes anyway, because when you say the word group home, immediately anybody's mind jumps to mentally ill. What did you mention before? The post-prison population that's transitioning. You've got, well, I mean, there's a lot of things in group homes, none of which neighbors are typically going to say yes to, because neighbors can get a little bit nervous about changes in their community. And that's, of course, something that people have to work their way through with good education. But I'm glad you're bringing up fair housing, because in real estate, as you know, we often just land into our protected class of race, and we forget about familial status and sex, and we think about color and religion and nationality, and then your physical abilities. And when you mention disability, I think a lot of us immediately go to the person who's maybe a quadriplegic and they're wheelchair bound, forgetting that somebody who has to have occupational therapy and they can't manage day to day by themselves is also disabled. And what a broadening of understanding that is, to think about where we can be solution providers. So describe to me what the plan and the process was for creating this group home that you envisioned. And I know you're going to get into telling us what happened in the process, but tell us what you were creating before you tell us what happened.
So the first thing that I did was, you know, I did my research and I called the municipalities, told them what I wanted to do and how did that fit in. And they were able to say, okay, yes, this is what you need to do. This is a residential use. Group homes are residential uses. Fill out the application, change the use, and then you have to do these certain things to make it safe with the code. And, you know, you just go through all the steps. You have to be licensed, and every state has a different license for those who take care of the elderly and disabled. And you bring up such a good point about a lot of people do not see elderly people as disabled. Even if they're in a wheelchair, even if they can't eat by themselves, they just say, well, they're old. They're not disabled. They're old. No, they are disabled. And even if you acquire your disability from a condition that comes with old age, you're no less disabled, and then you're no less protected by the Fair Housing Act. So that's a really important distinction. So if you want to open up one of these homes, the first thing you have to understand is who your client is. And your client is a disabled elderly person. It's not a retirement community. It's not someone who just turned 55 and wants to try out some traveling and the finer things of life. That's not who this home is for. That's not what this home is for. This home is for people who need a lot of care. You have to be willing to give that care and create a home that is renovated for these types of disabilities.
So what we used to call universal access, we now call, of course, aging in place. And we think about all the ways that you want to create an environment where somebody can move through. And that's the wider door frames, the lower countertops, the pull-out shelves, the roll-in showers, a lot of those things that can actually be seamlessly added to a home. So it's not like you're turning it into something that's not going to be sellable again, but you're really making it a broader marketplace. But I think that's what fair housing is too, is making a broader marketplace for more people to have somewhere to go. So how much space did you look for in that property to create space for somebody? And how many people would live in this property? Are we talking like 8 elderly seniors? Are we talking 4? What's the goal?
So every municipality is different. And the one that we're in allows 8. So we looked for a home that was big enough to have bedroom, an ensuite bathroom, and plenty of common space that they could live in. Now, you also have to create an area where we can exercise. And when you have people in wheelchairs, you have wheelchair yoga, you have to kind of space out the wheelchairs. So you need a big enough common room to do exercises. So we have that. We call that our little fitness area, which is really just, it was just a second living room that was in the home already that we just call it now the fitness area. And you can have other things in there too, but nothing that you wouldn't be able to provide in your own home. Like we have a little shampoo bowl that we put in like a, it's basically a closet, but it's a shampoo bowl that we have a little mirror so that we can do the lady's hair and wash hair in a comfortable fashion. And we called that our salon. So now, yeah, so you can have anything that you would be able to have in your own home, you know, a home gym or a home salon or anything you can have in these homes. So you are really just, the residents are living there and they're receiving home care. So it's like in-home care in a group.
And we talk about house hacking a lot with investors, and especially with our millennials, they want to rent out each bedroom in a house and that's how you cover it. And I think what you're describing here is house hacking for seniors, some kind of senior hacking. And I think it's a brilliant repurposing of a large property, which is also going to, you think about the environmental impact of a 10,000 square foot house that two people live in. Well, now you've got eight people in suites. The house suddenly becomes really valuable to a community. And I'm curious as to whether this property that you located was perceived as valuable once you decided to create a space for some elderly people to live.
Well, first, I want to mention that it's not as easy as just renting bedrooms out. There are a lot of codes in every state about, you know, the licensing that you need to care for elderly people. So it's not as easy as just getting a home and packing elderly people in. You have to get the proper licensing. You have to create, you're a business, you're a home care business, basically, that's operating out of this home, and they come together with certain licensing. So you have to have the heart and the love to take care of senior people. It's not that easy. And with construction codes and everything, it's a huge endeavor and your heart has to be in it. Now, as far as neighbors, first, the term group home always creates an issue because there are many types of group homes and not all are protected. Many times there are group homes that are up for public debate. For example, group homes for those in the prison system, those may come up for public debate, but you are permitted if you're disabled. If you're a disabled person, you are allowed to live in a residential community if you want, and you can live in a group and you can have caregivers take care of you if that's what you need. No one can say that you can't be here, that we don't want you here. It's not up for public debate. There is no vote on that. And what this experience taught me, because we actually drove into the property one day and found signs all over the neighborhood.
Okay, so I told y'all that I would do a review of Follow Up Boss, you know, because I'm your friend in real estate, and I did. Now, you know, there's a Blue Million CRM out there. I mean, if you go to any Facebook group, every realtor's like, which one should I use? Which one should I use? And you know that these CRM, which are client relationship managers or customer relationship manager, whatever you want to call it, it's truly a system that's just designed to help you know what to do next, because you're very busy and you're a multitasker in real estate. And with all those different tasks and balls up in the air, you need something to help you stay on track. And that's what Follow Up Boss does. Now, when you save a name and a phone number in there, that is basically a Rolodex. Follow Up Boss is going to take the names and phone numbers and also help you know what to do next, so you can maintain these relationships with your neighbors, because that's what this is about. Real estate is not about serving just prospects and clients. It's about taking great care of your neighbors' needs in real estate. And if you'll use a tool like Follow Up Boss, where they remember you, oh, they might even call you when they're ready to buy or sell again, or when their mom and daddy do, or their best friend or their kid, and you want to be top of mind. That's what a product like Follow Up Boss will do for you. Truly, it's going to change your business when you start paying better attention to people. They don't have to know you use Follow Up Boss, but they'll totally understand that they are being heard by you. So now there's a free trial for my people because you're loved. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. No credit card is required. And frankly, because you're my people and we made an ask for you, Follow Up Boss said, yes, you get double the free trial. That's actually enough time to log in, put some pieces in it, and watch it change your business as it has for so many realtors and teams nationwide. Again, go to followupboss.com/crazy to start your free trial today. Okay. Like what kind of signs? Was it welcome home neighbor, or was it go away old people? Were these like homemade placards with poster board and Sharpies? What was
there? Oh, no. They were professionally done signs all over the community.
They spent
money
on these signs?
Oh, they sure did. They sure did. And it said, stop Rosette. No commercial uses, as if disabled people are a supermarket or a zoo or some type of commercial retail establishment. This is a home. These people.
And Mom, that's a very nice name. They should be glad they had a well-named community being moved in.
Thank you. But there is nothing different from this home than any other home on the block. It's beautiful. It's anything. We really took it and made it much more beautiful than it was before. It was pretty much in disarray when we bought it. A beautiful neighborhood and just not very well taken care of. So having the neighbors protest the way that they did just really goes to show that even if it's old people, people will find a way to protest. People have feelings about those in wheelchairs. They have feelings about the traffic that they think it will create. People have feelings about the type of person that might be there or the type of person taking care of them. And people also have, they only have one idea about senior care sometimes. They have one vision of a very rundown nursing home that's just littered with trash or people, you know, asleep outside in wheelchairs or something, or a very big establishment with a huge parking lot and people coming in and out because they have 200 beds. We have 8. So there's a lot of confusion that comes around and people think, oh, it's a senior home. That means this. So there's a lot of education that's involved and you really have to be open and explain to people what this is because you have a lot of conflicting ideas. You have group home, you have senior home. These definitions mean different things to different people. But the most important thing to remember is that disabled people, including disabled elderly, are allowed to live in a residential neighborhood everywhere in the United States. You just have to call your municipality, find out where in the code and what stipulations are involved, put in your application, do all your renovations, get all your licensing, and you can do this for seniors.
And this is the whole point of fair housing, is to make sure that all of our neighbors have a chance to live where they want to live, provided they're, of course, in the protected classes. And I really think all neighbors should have a chance to live where they want to live. But I'll admit that I think sexual predators and child molesters shouldn't be able to live close to schools. You know, there's rules that are in place for good reason, but you're exactly right. It's about education. So I'm curious as to what y'all did as the purveyors of this property. What did you do for the neighbors to help get them to understand what was going on? Did you go knock on doors? Did you put a letter out there? Was it a social media strategy? How do you get them to listen? Because I think that's our biggest challenge when we're talking about fair housing issues is we just don't hear each other. We forget that each one of us is uniquely created, child of God, and we're all really meant to be living in community. So what was the strategy?
Well, you know, unfortunately, sometimes whatever strategy you have, if someone has in their mind that they don't want you there, then there's literally nothing you can say or explain that is going to make them change their mind. And unfortunately, we have that issue. I could have said, this is not a Planet Fitness gym in this home 100 times, but yet it's always brought up. They have a gym in the home as if it's Planet Fitness and it's open to the public. We've told them 1,000,000 times, it is a living room. This is for wheelchair people to pass the beanbag. This is not a public place. We have explained that the salon is not an open salon. It's not Supercuts. It is a in-home salon for these elderly women to wash their hair with dignity.
Dignity.
But yet it's always brought up, this salon. And they've been told 1,000,000 times and it still keeps being brought up. And it again points to there are people that prefer not to live next to certain classes of people, even elderly people in wheelchairs. And there can be 1,000,000 excuses of why that is. But again, the Fair Housing Act is there for that reason, because your feelings about if you would rather live next to a family with 2 kids, okay, and you'd rather live next to them than a group of wheelchair-bound seniors, okay, that's your preference. But you don't get to make that decision for them. You don't get to make that decision for them. And that's why the Fair Housing Act exists.
Well, it's like Ben Shapiro's always said, facts don't care about your feelings. And the fact is that private property rights exist so that we can create really interesting solutions. And this is an interesting and elegant solution that doesn't have 1,000 cars. You're talking probably, what, 2 Buicks at most, and maybe a van to take somebody to the doctor's.
Exactly right.
And like, I think about the caregiver that my grandmother had. We were so lucky because one of her friends had had this lady and then she passed. And so we snatched her up before she got on the open market. And a wonderful caregiver is just an angel straight from heaven. And this would actually probably be an opportunity to scale somebody like the lady that worked with my grandmother. And she could take care of a few people instead of one, so that we could then take advantage of the really wonderful labor that is existing in the marketplace. It's just a matter of thinking differently. And maybe, Therese, maybe that grumpy neighbor, maybe his mother is going to need help at some point, and then he'll see it differently. Because sometimes it takes that personal moment before your eyes get opened. And yes, in the meantime, I'm just grateful that you're out there forging ahead and leaning on the laws that are in place for a reason, so that you can take care of a population that frankly is forgotten far too often. So before we wrap up our episode, I'm really curious, is this an investment strategy that you're going to continue to put more of in the community to help provide more solutions in between these two extremes?
Yes, absolutely. I'm already working with a couple groups to open much more of these. I am always going to be a very staunch advocate for the deinstitutionalization of senior care. And I absolutely want this in Pennsylvania. So many people do. This is the future of senior care. You brought up the caregiving crisis. There are not enough caregivers to go around. And this is a way to really scale them. Also, when you're in home care, you have to renovate sometimes your entire house if you become wheelchair bound. This is a way to also have them live in a group in one home that is completely accessible. So this is the future. And most people are on board. I know the Western part of the United States does great. There is an amazing group in Arizona that trains people for this that I absolutely consulted with before doing this. So there is so much out there. This is the way of the future for senior care.
So if somebody who's listening to this episode or watching it wants to know more about what you did and how they could learn from you and create some of these in their own community, how's the best way for them to reach out and contact you?
They can go right to my website. It's rosetteseniorliving.com. And on there, you can actually make a Zoom conference with me, and I'd be happy to talk to you, and we can consult and definitely give you any information that you need to.
All right, friends, all of the links to reach this amazing woman are in the show notes for this episode. But before you go to the show notes, you need to leave a little thumbs up and a comment to tell her what your thoughts are on this showing up in your community. Let us know if you're seeing it yet, because we have to all get more creative. The housing shortage isn't going to go away anytime soon. And the compassion shortage could definitely be improved if we would look at ideas like Teresa's doing in her community. So thank you for what you're doing in the Philly area. And for what
thank
you're
you,
doing, scale it in other ways so that we can deinstitutionalize our elderly. I like that phrase. Totally going to steal it, because this is the right way to do things. And it's exactly why the fair housing laws exist. So thank you so much for sharing this information and for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, I know you loved her. Leave her a comment so that she will feel good. And then hit me 5 stars, subscribe, and a bell. And I'll see you next time.
Okay, now don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism, and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.